Hello, everybody. It's time for a brand new episode of the Nola Nerdcast. How we doing, everyone?
Excited. I do want to chime in and say that Best Buy had an amazing sale on hard copies of games, especially Bethesda games, and I wind up picking up Fallout 76 for $6 with a steelbook, and it came with a keychain. And I'm not like promoting Best Buy because I don't know, but I do have to say that Fallout 76 is a surprisingly fun game, but I only think it's fun because my friends that are playing it are slightly psychotic, and the bugs in it are hilarious.
Well, and you're also getting the most unbugged version of the game.
Even with the bugs, they're great. Like, I threw a grenade in a group of, like, monsters, and they all just flew into the sky. I don't know if it was meant to happen, but if it did, that's amazing.
Well, and you're also getting it now, because now that NPCs have returned to the valley, so it's not such a desolate wasteland.
It's a pretty game, too, for running off of a really old engine.
I'm real tired of that engine, by the way.
Oh, God. It's a good thing Microsoft bought them.
Who isn't tired of that?
I don't know. I after Fallout 4, I was just over it.
Man. They need to just accept the fact that it's time to move on from it.
You can only slap so much fresh paint on it.
I mean, that's the problem, though, is, like, these companies that aren't Epic or that aren't licensing the Unreal or the... Oh, man, what's the other
Frostbite.
Engine that... No, Frostbite. God, no, not Frostbite.
Crytek?
No, there's another one that's, like, open source and people... Not open source,
Unity.
But you just... Unity. Unreal and Unity. Because those are created to be engines abused by everyone. If you ever notice that the games with the most bugs and issues are the ones that are being forced on their own proprietary, like, engines, like Frostbite. That's why EA has so much trouble with stuff like Anthem and Mass Effect and Andromeda and Battlefield. And then you look at Bethesda's engine, which is just decrepit. Or you look at Square... refusing to move away from the Luminous engine early on, and that was half the reason their games took 10 years to make last gen. Like, that the reason that Square Enix is pumping out games faster is because they moved on to it's Unity or Unreal, one of them, but they moved away from
Unreal.
Yeah, but the point is they are using one of them instead of, like...
Oh, yeah.
So, good, is all I have to say. So, booyah.
Absolutely, but I'm glad you're having fun, Josh.
Oh, it's surprisingly a blast. Just like this banh mi I'm eating.
Can we
now.
Not talk to Josh when he's refusing to stop eating food during the show?
We gave you all the opportunity to finish eating your food.
He goes, you guys can start the show and just start talking. I'll finish, and then he starts the show by starting his own topic unprompted.
Makes no sense.
It's the most Josh thing ever. Okay, I'm gonna take the reins from Mr. Mouthful of banh mi.
Yeah, right.
So basically, we have a question, Chris. We have an email question from a Molly Mancuso.
Oh man, okay.
And the question states.
Yeah.
Do you like the Fantastic Beasts movies, or would you rather them move on to a movie about the Marauders?
Ah, the famous question.
Is that a famous question?
Well, when you've been around the internet as much
the
as I have.
The time-honored question of... It's such a loaded question, though, because the Marauders is a concept full of possibility, right? Like,
sure.
We don't know how they could fuck that up yet. But we already know how they would mess up Fantastic Beasts because we've had two lukewarm films already.
Yeah, I think part of my problem is I don't like Eddie Redmayne.
He is not great. I will never, all I can ever picture him in is screaming his way through, what was it, Jupiter Ascending?
Yes, I was just explaining Jupiter Ascending to someone earlier today.
Can you actually explain it to somebody?
No, but I... And here's the thing, like, I love Jupiter Ascending the same way that I love I loved The Postman when I was 15. Like, it's not a good movie. But no. I just, there's something about it.
Is that just
it.
The end of it? Like, it's yeah, not a good movie.
It's not a good movie. And scene.
End of my sentence.
But you know what is good about it? I'm never going to be too mad at a movie that has a flying werewolf angel.
Oh, wait, what?
That, yeah, Channing Tatum is a werewolf, but he also has wings and he can fly on a skateboard. They're like rollerblades or whatever. So I think it's pretty cool at that point, but it's such a mess. It's such a bad movie.
It sounds pretty awesomely bad.
Yeah. It's man.
The problem,
it had potential.
The problem also is that it's over 2 hours. So you have to kind of commit to watching it.
No, that's not good.
Yeah. It's on Netflix at the moment if you've got I don't know, 2 hours to kill. But no, I was willing to give the first Fantastic Beasts movie a pass. I think the second one is so bad. It's just much, much worse in every respect.
Yeah, that's like, and from what I recall, it kind of like undid a lot of what made the first one good. Like, didn't it make the sister just an unlikable villain?
It turned her basically.
For no reason.
Yeah, the one who was a mind reader decided to join the Nazis, basically. So I don't know. They're allegedly they're going on with three. But I don't know. I think Harry Potter needs to go to bed for a couple of years.
Well,
I'm with Chris on this one.
I mean, I agree. It's I'm trying to think of other it's Star Wars syndrome, where you have taken something that was so universally beloved and then you keep trying to expand and add and release stuff to milk it, and you're just hitting diminishing returns among all of it.
Yeah. And the best thing that's happening to Star Wars is that
I'm saying that
out.
As a massive Last Jedi fan.
Yes, I think we all are in this group.
Yeah.
But I think you know, Star Wars is taking a break. I think that's the best thing for it, and I think Potter needs a break. Maybe this RPG, when it releases, will kind of, you know, pump everything back up.
I'm really torn about that, but I'm still pro the game, even though it's a very loaded thing
now. It's a problem, but I'm also leaning to pro. But I think you have to make that decision yourself.
It's a personal decision, and I don't begrudge anyone that that does not want to, if that makes sense.
No, I agree.
Yeah, that makes sense. If, like, you can play the game and not support her, but you can still kind of support her, but, like, and play the game, but, like, be like, you know what, she says the messed up stuff. And
well, the problem is, like,
I can't
support her anymore, but the reality of the situation is, if you engage with Harry Potter at all, whether she had a direct hand in it or not, She getting paid, so you can't engage in Harry Potter as a fan anymore and say I don't want to support JK. It's either it's the separating the creator from the creation syndrome. You just have to does what she says stop you from loving something that you've loved for a long time, and it's a case by case basis per person. And that's just the reality of the situation. I mean, we are in a culture where the concept of what house are you is a legitimate, like, icebreaker question, where that just it would not have worked any other way. Like, it's just Harry Potter has become part of our culture the same way Star Wars has.
That is such a Ravenclaw thing to say.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's true. I am a Ravenclaw.
What a nerd.
Oh, shut up, Hufflepuff.
Hufflepuff for life.
Anyway, I mean, but you see what I'm trying to say? Like, that is a thing that is just part of our culture now. Like,
I imagine it's even harder on the younger generation, who traditionally younger generations are a little more open and would be hurt a lot more by JK's comments.
And they are.
Yeah.
Gen Z is very much more in the camp of, you know, I can drop her, whereas millennials are the ones that were young when Harry Potter first blew up. they are the ones that are taking it a lot harder.
Yeah, it's a hard thing, and it's a personal choice, and I don't envy anyone having to make the choice like we are.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's like, it's some people are still progressive, but yet they haven't moved to the next phase when it comes to different ideas and thoughts. It's like, you know, in the future, our children might be dating robot dolphins. We don't know, and we might not be for that. Some might be for that. So, you know, and I forget what comedian said, it's like, one day, like, we'll be the bigots.
Yeah.
So
that's I'm hoping never to be that part, but you know,
I'm with
you
on that.
Okay. However, I have some amazing news.
Wait, one more thing.
Wait, we never actually answered the question.
Yes. I'm not seeing a third Fantastic Beasts movie. That second movie sucked.
I know. It's just rough, right?
I'm not seeing it purely because it was not a good movie. And I don't know what you can do with that franchise aside from just blowing the whole thing up and starting over. Because I think even the revelation about Ezra Miller as the as a secret Dumbledore,
mm-hmm.
I think that kind of sucks too, and that's not like a compelling thing to stay around.
Yeah.
Would I want a Marauders movie? Yeah, maybe. It depends. It depends who's directing it. It depends, you know, who they get for it.
You know what I would like?
Hmm.
I would like that to be something that happens after JK passes and it's just, it like goes to an estate, or it becomes like part of a company, like just part of the WB hierarchy, and then we get a Netflix or HBO Max. It actually would be HBO Max because it's WB, but a series, not a movie,
yeah, it'll be an HBO Max.
But an actual series. I think that would be nice.
I think a series is a great idea, and I'm kind of shocked they're not at least pitching like a couple of series.
Like HBO Max is starving for original content. How are they not delving into the Harry Potter well yet?
I got things that can say about it, but I can't legally talk about
Understood.
It.
Understood. Yeah, well, how about I take that as a really good segue into our good news for the show?
Good news, me, Matt.
Okay, so we have a giveaway to do for our loyal fans, and it is for a game that is in a series that is close to home to a lot of gamers our age, because the PlayStation 1 was a formative system for many of us.
What are you calling especially old?
All of us. What are you talking about? Yes. We are literally just, you know, when you go into and have to fill out an online survey and they give you the age ranges, and we're now firmly in the farther end of the spectrum now.
Yeah, I don't know that.
It's like, are you 21 to 28? No. Are you 29 to 32? No.
That's a weird age group.
You know what I'm trying to say. Shut up. Anyway, moving on to the goodness. So we have been given the pleasure to have some PlayStation 4 digital codes for the full version of a little game called Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time. The brand new game featured everyone's favorite marsupial. And I've always wanted to use this pun. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Matt.
If it's Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, is it safe to say that you could crash forward into a time-shattered adventure?
You know what? You've been working on that all day, so I'll just say yes.
So the game is available on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, but we have PlayStation 4 copies, which will be enhanced if you have a PS4 Pro console and supports offline multiplayer for up to 4 players.
Well, look at Matt doing that. That's pretty good. That's I do want to note that good call on the marsupial. Like, I don't think most people know that bandicoots are real things, and they're adorable.
They are real things. So I wanted to just lay out the ground rules for how someone could get this, get the codes. Mm-hmm. And then I thought we could talk about some quick memories about the franchise, and then let our fans just run wild.
I'm going to stop right off here. I have no memories of Crash Bandicoot. I've never played it.
Well, that's because you were a lame-o and had an Xbox growing up.
It's true. I did.
You didn't. You never had a PlayStation 1?
I mean, I did, but I only played Castlevania.
It's true. You have to understand, younger Chris was not a very expansive gamer.
Well, and let's be clear. Younger Chris's parents didn't believe in gaming.
Oh,
also true. Anyway, so how you can get it is very simple. Message us with your favorite memory of the franchise, no matter what, and you will be entered into a chance to win. Tell us why Crash Bandicoot was special to you. And also, I'm going to call Chris a liar because he has experience with Crash Bandicoot. Did you not play Uncharted 4 where you played Crash Bandicoot in-game?
Which is a great experience in itself because it's hilarious.
It's a beautiful Easter egg, and I did, and I failed at it an awful lot.
Yeah, damn right you did. But that means you have played Crash Bandicoot,
you know what?
And you can say your favorite memory is the Easter egg from Uncharted 4.
You're right. You're absolutely correct, Matt. I can do those. I can do both those things, and I agree.
So mine would be, I'm stealing Josh's because this was mine first, is just how good the marketing was for original Crash Bandicoot, like the commercials where the guy in the Crash suit would just take a microphone and stand outside the actual Nintendo headquarters and troll Mario, because this was pre-Mario 64, so when he talked about how they were a fully 3D platforming game, that was a big deal.
Oh, yeah, and it's funny because, like, those commercials just hit so hard about, like, this is the attitude Sony's taken in the game generation, and this is just a really silly game at the end of the day, and I mean that in the best way possible.
We talked about this before the show started, about how hip those commercials were, and how hipness was really hard to find in the late 90s.
Like, the closest you could come to was the Sega commercial of Sega does what Nintendo don't. Like, it just, it was a really smart marketing tactic. And you have to also give it up to Naughty Dog, of all people, because a lot of people forget the original trilogy was Naughty Dog, who went on to do Jak and Daxter, Uncharted, and Last of Us.
Yeah.
So, good time. So, yeah, make sure you send us your memories. And you'll be entered into a chance to win this amazing game for the PlayStation 4. And bonus, because the PlayStation, all games released after a certain point on PlayStation 4 were required to have upgrade option paths to PlayStation 5. So theoretically, this code will also be a PlayStation 5 code.
Now, Matt, have you played 4 yet?
I have.
What do you think about it? The Crash Bandicoot?
I mean, I'm not the world's biggest Crash fan. I think Ratchet and Clank and other Sony platformer mascot games exceeded it. However, I will say, since Crash went multi-platform and went to Activision, the quality of their games had not been as high as that original trilogy. And there's a reason that this game gets to be called Crash 4 when none of the others were. And it feels like it. It feels like the true sequel to the original Naughty Dog games. It's pretty darn quality.
Okay.
So
we'll take it.
So put that in your hat and in your pipe and marsupial it. I don't know.
I also did not know that bandicoots were real.
They were real, and they're adorable. Oh, look at them.
I didn't know. Why would I even ask?
I don't know, because you're an intelligent person.
But I don't care.
Anyway.
All right.
That's pretty awesome. And
it is. I'm glad we have some giveaways.
Yeah. So shout out to Crash 4 for being awesome, and can't wait to pick our winner. So let's move on to the next topic, which is, I don't know.
X of Swords!
We haven't talked about comics in so long. I am so excited.
Isn't really the Ten of Swords? Like a tarot card?
But that's what I love. You know what that reminds me of? Is because it's so easy when you think X-Men to immediately just announce, like, pronounce the X as in the letter.
Weapon 10?
But yeah, exactly. The same thing that they pulled off with Weapon X. The whole time you just think it's like they use X because it's X-Men, but then you realize it's Weapon 10, and there's been other experiments, and you just, it's that small Geoff Johns-esque, and he does it so much.
Don't give that to Jeff.
No. I'm talking about the way Geoff Johns gets full credit for it, because he did it with Flash, he did it with Green Lantern, he's done it with lots of other properties. Where he just takes
Grant Morrison brought up.
I know. I'm saying
Grant Morrison dig deep.
It is a Geoff Johns-esque move to take this small, innocuous thing from a well-established franchise, and that one change blows open the whole story.
It's true, and I do, you know, I just don't want you to talk smack about Grant Morrison, because I
will talk smack about Grant Morrison, because A, he has killed Green Lantern. He is I do not like him at all. And when I say kill Green Lantern, I don't mean the character. I mean the entire franchise as a comic series. It is awful, and it's the first time in almost 15 years I've stopped reading Green Lantern, because Grant Morrison, the hack, has ruined it.
Wow, dude, you're going to get abducted in the middle of the night, not even aware, and then you're going to be in a room with Alan Moore, Grant Morrison, and Warren Ellis, you're gone.
Wow, the trifecta of garbage. All right.
All right.
Kidding. Grant Morrison's Animal Man was great. His All-Star Superman was bad. His Batman R.I.P. was
All-Star
bad.
Superman is not bad.
All-Star Superman is All-Star Superman boring. Is
good. It's not. Boring is different than bad. It's not bad.
When you're writing a superhero comic, boring is bad.
It's not bad, though.
We will agree to disagree.
Can you agree that you have a different taste?
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
I have not read Green Lantern.
But not his Green Lantern.
I have not read his Green Lantern, so I'm not taking any sides on this. We're talking about X of Swords. Why are we talking about Green Lantern?
Because we got thrown off by Jonathan Hickman's. The X of Swords is actually the Ten of Swords, because the crux is there's going to be a big tournament between Krakoa and Arakoa, and 10 fighters on both sides have to find swords and join
in. Can I
tell
you my three favorite things about this so far?
You sure as hell may.
Number one, chapters are coming out in big chunks. We got 3 chapters this week. Three exciting chapters.
Which I realized when they first said there was going to be 22 chapters, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. But yeah, 3 a week makes it reasonable.
Number two, it's a tournament. And as someone who has seen shonen anime, tournaments are the shit.
Tournament arcs are great.
And number three, there's a prophecy.
And any story with a prophecy is better.
My only thing is I wish the prophecy had been placed earlier, so that we could kind of marinate on it for a bit
before they told us all the answers.
Yeah, because I have the issue of X Factor open, where they have the prophecy, and then it's like, oh, Cypher said he solved the prophecy.
Yeah.
What were you gonna say, Josh?
Real question here. So yes. Hickman has established that the X-Men can't necessarily die.
Not anymore. That is the first thing this series did.
Matt, do you want to explain the nitty-gritty?
I sure as hell do. So, Josh, so for the longest, since Hickman's X-Men started, one of the coolest things has been they have solved death. And anytime an X-Men dies, they use Professor X's Cerebro backups of their daily, like, mind dump to revive them using this Council of Five mutants that, when their powers are combined in a specific way, can revive a mutant and bring them back fully formed to the exact moment they died. And then Professor X dumps their memories back into them, essentially reviving them to the exact day before they died. And it's been a really cool thing and really well done. And it's added a whole new game changer plan to these mutants. And then X of Swords happened, and they found out that if you die in Otherworld, which is where this tournament is taking place, because Otherworld is the Marvel Universe's like nexus of realities, when they tried to revive Rockslide, who had died over there, his soul got infused with the reality of every other Rockslide in the MCU multiverse, and it effectively killed him and replaced him with a brand new, like, amalgamation mutant. So now, technically, physically, they're still there, but they are effectively dead. So if you die in this tournament, there ain't no coming back for you.
And also all the Cerebros got exploded too.
No, no. Temporarily haywired. They mentioned that they're back up and running. It's just when they tried to replace the mind of the rock slide being the reality fluctuation, like, fucked with Cerebro. So it's still there for, like, everyone else that dies there, like Richter. But crazy, huh?
No, poor Richter.
So
Richter's back.
Josh, do you want to hear who the Ten of Swords are?
Oh. Actually, I really do. So I'm going to wait to read this when it's all done.
Oh, like, this is going to be a phenomenal trade.
Yes. Yeah, like,
straight up, I am buying this 100%. Like, actually, it's available on Amazon for pre-order right now.
Yeah. So, Josh, we know that there are 10 swords and 10 sword wielders. There's only two that are kind of up in the air, but we'll see. The first one is Ilyana Rasputin with her soul sword.
Okay.
Prophecy kind of made that one very clear. The next one is Cable with his new space sword that he acquired recently.
Okay.
Space sword belongs to Rom the Space Knight, an old Marvel character from the way back when.
That's pretty rad.
Yeah. The next one is Warlock and Cypher. Warlock is the sword, and Cypher is still kind of combined.
But we don't really know how that's going to work, which makes it awesome.
Yes.
That's interesting.
The next one is Storm, who has to get a vibranium sword from Wakanda.
Nice.
Which was taken care of in this issue today. Prophecy was so cool.
Yes. Once goddess, once queen, one sword with which to split the sky in twain, vibranium inlaid, a tempest contained, the wrath of heavens comes wielding a legacy.
Mm.
The next one is Wolverine with the Muramasa sword. And the guy that Wolverine's going to be facing in the tournament, very cool. Solemn. The mutants of Arakoa are the children of Apocalypse and other mutants. So we've not seen any of them before. The next one's kind of confusing. It has to deal with the Braddock twins and probably Excalibur. But it's not clear. At least it wasn't as of X Factor. The next one is Gorgon, and he's got some sort of question mark sword. And the final one is Apocalypse getting his sword.
So we don't know
what these other magic swords are yet.
I kind of feel like the game might be rigged in Apocalypse's favor.
It's hard to say, because right now we're getting all the characters are getting their swords. They're joining the circle. We have a lot of questions at this point, which I got to tell you, Matt. After Empire, this is an event that like has me salivating for the next chapter.
Yeah, it's almost like if you come up with a really cool concept and then execute it well. And you know what else helps is that it's only an X event. I have found that the X-centric events have been pretty much as a whole way more engaging than Marvel events as a whole in the past decade.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. I cannot wait for next week. Like, and it's a double-edged sword for two reasons, LOL. Ah. Is that because it's 22 parts, it crosses over into every existing X book. So I'm buying copies of books I don't usually buy because that's a good thing because it has nothing to do with their original title. Like the X Factor was only an X Factor book in that the main character of it was Polaris because it was about the prophecies. And Wolverine's book was about Wolverine. But like the Hellions book next week, it's not going to have to do with the Hellions.
No, probably not.
X-Force had nothing to do with X-Force. It was just more Wolverine. So that's a good thing because it's not good. It skips the trouble with tie-ins as a whole where you're like, if you don't read a book, you're just kind of dumped into their storyline with no idea what's going on. That's not an issue here. The flip side of that is every X book has had their personal story just unceremoniously paused somewhere, even in the middle of an arc. Doesn't matter. It's a sword time.
I believe X Factor was in the middle of the arc.
Yeah, they're in Mojoverse.
Oh yeah, they are in Mojoverse.
Did they get pulled from Mojoverse to do this, or they're
no?
Still...
They don't even mention it. They just we're just in the X of Swords storyline, and the Mojoverse story is on pause.
And X Factor's doing the stuff with Rasputin.
Yeah.
So, like, who knows? That's always the sucky thing about events is that if you're into a book and it has a big crossover, it always derails, and sometimes books don't recover. Peter David's X Factor had that problem a lot when X Factor Investigations took place.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of another one. I think Squirrel Girl made it out pretty unscathed.
Well, no, there was there was another one where like series that have only had like 2 to 3 issues are now suddenly pulled into a crossover, and it's weird because it's like that's just not a great way to build your own storyline.
Yeah.
Anyway, X of Swords is great.
But X of Swords is great, and keeping on the comics bandwagon, you know what I've kind of enjoyed doing recently is the story going across Ms. Marvel and Champions.
Okay. Are you
paying attention to this?
I only know that there's a storyline. I dropped Magnificent Ms. Marvel.
Okay.
So no, as a whole, I am not familiar other than the fact that there is a law called Kamala's Law that you mentioned last episode.
So the story is that there was a supervillain attack at her high school, and in her civilian identity, Kamala Khan got injured and I don't know, sent to the hospital. As a result, lawmakers saw this and like, well, we have to pass a law outlawing teenage superheroes. So they formed a division of SHIELD called CRADLE, which has an acronym.
And we love it.
We love it. We stan.
We stan Lee.
Oh, shut up. We have CRADLE cracking down on teenage heroes, and in Champions, which has been relaunched recently, I mean relaunched today, not recently, Champions is the young teen hero saying, we're just going to keep going, which is what you expect them to do.
Yeah.
So this is really early, but I think this is interesting because Marvel's always kind of lagged behind on the teenage hero front if it's not Spider-Man or X-Men characters. And they've really upped their game, you know, Kamala Khan, Miles, Kid Nova, things like that. So yeah. then to throw this wild card in there of them being outside the law because they're minors, I think it could make for some interesting stories depending on how long they plan to run it.
Interesting.
So...
yeah.
You know, one thing I really like about Champions?
What's that?
Is how diverse the cast is. When it first launched, the only white kid was baby Cyclops. Like, everyone else was Vision's daughter and Amadeus Cho Hulk and Miles Morales and Gwen Stacy or Gwen Poole and Kamala and Nova. And it was really cool. You didn't really see that very often.
Yeah, and they added some other heroes to the Champions now with the new Unbeatable Wasp and some other characters I've never seen before, which makes me kind of want to go back to Champions and see, like, who the fuck these people are.
Mm-hmm.
On the DC side of things, Matt, what are you thinking about Three Jokers?
Loving it.
I'm liking it. Mostly because I don't have like a real feel for it yet.
Well, I mean, it's 2 of 3 issues in.
Yeah.
I mean, this has been a long running like mystery that Geoff Johns left unanswered at the end of his new 52 Justice League run, of all things, after the end of Darkseid War. We were told that there was actually 3 Jokers, and then they just left it open-ended while we waited for the 4 years for Geoff Johns to actually finish Doomsday Clock. But it's I dig it. I don't, it kind of sucks because Batman for so long now has been Tom King and now James Tynion the IV's amazing runs on Batman.
Yes.
And currently we're in the middle of Joker War, which just ended today as well.
Did you read Joker War?
I did.
How was it? I didn't read it.
You? Why wouldn't you have read it?
I stopped Batman when that first story ended. At the end of.
Oh, bruh, you are missing out. James Tynion is like such a good writer.
That's okay. I'll get the trade.
All right. Well, Joker Warrior was incredible.
Okay.
It stuck the landing really well, opened up the path for some new stories, introduced a really cool new character called Clown Hunter.
Yes, I've heard about Clown Hunter.
Who is this little Asian kid whose parents were killed by Joker, and during Joker War just dons his own mask, and with a batarang that he recovered taped to a bat like a spiked club, has just gone out and been murdering clowns, like anyone affiliated with Joker. He's just been murdering them, and the whole like community is rallying behind him. So when Batman was like looking into him, trying to be like, who is this kid, and like, I don't condone murder, and everyone in the community was like, I don't know what you're talking about, narc, I ain't seen nothing. So anyway, Joker War has been was great, but that's the problem with Three Jokers, is that we're getting this in the midst of this huge new turning point of in Batman history, and it has nothing to do with Tom King's run. It has nothing to do with the current run, and it just feels like out of place, because it's really hard to just kind of wrap your head around a standalone Batman thing, because it's not standalone. It's literally a follow-up to a previous Batman story, but we're no longer in the New 52.
Yeah.
So it's weird, but I still really like it.
Yeah, it is too early to tell, so I'm kind of into it, but I don't know. There's some things with Red Hood and Barbara Gordon that I don't really love.
Yeah, but they quickly pulled that out and were like, this was a mistake. Yeah, so,
which is good. Have you been getting the death metal tie-ins?
You know it. Because they're not really tie-ins, are they?
No.
They're straight up, like, parts of the story.
Well, and even if they're not, they're just like, hey, what's going on with the Flashes this week?
I really am enjoying death metal as a whole, even as... I'm very much excited to reread the entire Scott Snyder verse,
basically,
because... Everything starts in his Batman series, goes into metal, which goes into his Justice League run.
Yeah.
Because metal ends with them breaking the source wall.
Yeah.
Which dovetails directly into his Justice League run, which dovetails back into death metal. So it's one continuous story. And he's the kind of guy that would have like seeded everything way early on. So I would love to just go back and read everything when this is all collected.
When this is done, I really want to reevaluate metal, which I really did not care for.
Mm-hmm.
But after having this, I think you know, I might find a different appreciation for it. Maybe. We'll see.
Maybe.
Finally, how are you feeling about Deceased?
Dead Planet?
Well, there's two, because there's the online-only.
I don't have the online-only one. I have to wait for that to be compiled.
I'll talk about that, but let's talk about Dead Planet first.
Well, I don't talk about it. I don't want to know what's going on.
Yet. I mean, I'm going to tell you, like, the broad strokes, but let's talk about Dead Planet.
I like the idea that there's a cure somewhere, but the way this ended, it was like, oh, no.
Yeah, that's a very cool final image.
Man. If you're DC and you need someone to brutally murder your characters in an alternate universe, you call Tom Taylor. The man behind Deceased and Injustice cannot stop killing people.
It's very edgelordy, but it's still pretty good.
But like, not in a bad way. Edgelord's bad.
Yeah. Deceased Hope at World's End is like the tale right before shit goes bad in Deceased.
Okay.
And they're short, like 10 to 15 page little stories of like people getting on the boat in Nantucket and trying to keep everyone alive, and when Black Adam turned evil.
So none of those can have happy endings then.
No, but you know what? They're fun, and they're less than $1 online, so they're totally worth the purchase, and they'll be really fun when they're collected.
And they're 100% going to be collected as a one big thing, probably.
Absolutely is.
Okay.
So that's so much comics that's going on right now that we talked about.
Yeah.
Man, COVID has helped the comic industry to get these guys writing, huh?
No, COVID has not helped the comic. I mean, remember there was 2 months where comics didn't do go at all.
Well, and refresh my memory, wasn't X of Swords supposed to come out in the summer?
Probably.
And I know Ms. Marvel was definitely happening in the pre-times.
Yeah.
So there's some good stories going on right now as the comics industry, you know, struggles to find its footing in this strange new world.
The bright side of 2020. 2020 was an awful year, but man, did you read X-Men?
Hey, look, you have to find the joy when you can, okay?
Yeah, Josh, you gotta grab onto the light when you find it, all
right? I am being joyful. I love when X-Men's good. X-Men should always be good. Like, at the end of the day, like, it's one of those things. It's like, come on, guys. It's not that hard to write a really good X-Men storyline. You have so much material. You just dig deep and just work at it.
I mean, I will counter that it is very hard to write a good X-Men. We saw it last year with the last Uncanny X-Men series.
Yup.
Which was tied into the Age of X-Man and was just so bleak and miserable. I stopped
reading X-Men. It wasn't until Hickman came back. I had dropped all X-Men books.
It almost had no redeeming qualities to it. It was just so, so miserable. So you can ruin an X-Men story very easily. Can.
I just don't want people to.
However, we need to move on to our final topic of the night.
Yeah, let's hear it.
It's been a while. We've forgotten for several weeks to talk about our games of the generation.
Oh, yeah, we messed up on that one.
It's fine. It's been a while for us, so we are here to fix that.
Yes, we talked about this earlier. I am excited to go back to this list.
So... We conferred earlier because we didn't want to duplicate each other, but we're still going to just, and remember, let's go over the ground rules again, because this is not a personal list. Like, there are going to be games on each of our, that we each talk about that we also agree on. This is just going to be a master 30 total game of the generations from the Nolan Nerdcast. It's a collaborative effort, basically. I don't think we're going to rank them. I'll just put them alphabetically.
That sounds good to me.
Let's start off, and I'll remind everyone what was on the list already.
Yes.
Last time I said The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. Chris said Doom 2016, and Josh said Resident Evil 7. So let's start in the reverse order, and Josh, you go first. What you got, fam?
Do you want me to do... Are we just
you
doing
pick,
one?
Just pick whichever one. We're going to go in order. We're going to do all of the three that we've missed so that we're all caught up.
Darkest Dungeon.
Darkest Dungeon.
I like to pick this game because it is a roguelike game, but there's a lot of really interesting preparing for the battle. You don't know if you're going to survive this dungeon. You don't know what you're really going to need. Everything is trial and error. The difficulty is there. The art style is beautiful. The narration keeps you so into that game. It is such an amazing experience. And if you like really difficult games with some really interesting art styles, with some Lovecraftian, just weaving all through with this, I don't know, man. There's something about that game, and it's on so many different platforms that it's perfect on every single one.
All right. Chris, what you got for us?
For my first game, I picked Batman Arkham Knight.
Woo-woo.
The Arkham formula last generation was perfected with Arkham City. Arkham Knight added the Batmobile. It's a ton of fun. You can criticize it for, glorifying the Batmobile over other mechanics. But at the end of the day, it's a tremendous game. I played it recently, within the last year, and it holds up. It's beautiful. It's dense. It's a lot of fun. And this list would be wrong without an Arkham on it.
Okay.
All right. Then I guess I will go.
Yes.
All right. My next one is Horizon Zero Dawn. This is not only a great game on its own right, but it really deserves recognition for coming from a studio that had never delivered a game of that caliber or quality before. Guerrilla Studios before that had really only been known for the Killzone franchise, which, while decent, was never topping the charts for anyone's best of. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
And then they completely pivoted. Like, I'm talking the kind of pivot where the Jack and Daxter people coming out with Uncharted, you know, or the Sly Cooper people saying, here's Infamous. Like, that kind of company pivot. Or the Ratchet and Clank people saying, hey, we made this game called Resistance. I don't know. It's just, it's really cool when a studio can 180 like that and then blow it out of the water. And Horizon Zero Dawn captivated me with a story that ended up going places like, by now you can kind of guess story beats sometimes in games, but Horizon swerved you so many times. And when you actually realized the meaning of the name Zero Dawn, by then you were just fucking hooked. And fighting robotic dinosaurs never got old. I enjoyed the open world, the combat outside of fighting humans. Fighting humans was standard. There was nothing special about that, but everything else in the game. And then it had was some of the best DLC of this generation with the Frozen Wilds one. Oh man, I'm blanking on the name. Frozen Wilds. I was right. Okay. And Aloy just kind of came out of nowhere to be like one of the defining brand new characters of this entire generation. So good for her. Good for Guerrilla Dawn and good for Horizon Zero Dawn.
And they had a great voice acting cast.
Yes, that the game. Yeah, I mean, it's just a solid ass game that I really enjoyed. And it's one of the earliest games that Saki fell for, too. So always a plus when you have that going for you.
Yes.
All right.
Oh, it's my turn again.
It sure is.
Tis.
Okay, so this is going to be quick because there are previous episodes that people can listen to know how amazing and how much I love this game. And I think this is not only the game of the generation, but the game of the PlayStation 4. Ghost of Tsushima.
Bold claim.
So
I know you love you some Ghost of Tsushima, my brother.
Man, there's so much about it. It is the game of the PlayStation 4, and it is probably in the top 5 of game of the generation for me. So that's all I can say about it. There are multiple episodes that you can go back.
No, go. You can go into a little more depth than that because you're right. It is a phenomenal game, and it's a perfect swan song for the console.
And it really is. The style, the combat system is every single time you get into a battle, it's so satisfying. The acting is amazing. The setting is beautiful. The camera, the color, the story is just phenomenal because it just takes the mythological story of the samurai and adds some nice little modern like moves to it. It's just a great game, and Sucker Punch is an amazing game studio. I'm just happy it was them that did it. Honestly, it makes me so happy to see a game studio come from nothing and try out things and eventually just hit it. It's just like Horizon Zero Dawn. I think that's the one thing that we can say about the PlayStation 4. It made a lot of these game studios that were kind of like, "Eh, these are pretty good games," make some amazing games.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah, absolutely. Good times.
Chris,
I'm going with Resident Evil 2 Remake.
Yeah.
In my opinion, the gold standard of what you want when you're looking for a remake of a classic game. Beautiful, yeah. Fun, loyal to its original, to the original tone, but fixed for a modern sensibility. This was a revelation. You know, I've never played the Resident Evil games on the PlayStation, but, you know, getting my hands on this and really kind of chewing into all the good stuff they did to kind of make it work, how can you not love it?
Easy. It's a scary game.
It's not that scary.
It's scary.
It's scary.
Mr. X is scary.
He is scary. He's very upsetting, and I don't care for him.
Amazingly upsetting. Everything about that guy, it's only safe rooms are where you're safe. The moment you step out of that and you hear those footsteps, you're like, what do I do?
It's a real problem, but it's a great game.
It is a great game.
And it is the gold standard by which remakes, because we throw around remakes like, you know, Kingdoms of Amalur got a remaster, and, you know, remaster and remakes are different words.
Yes.
And this is what, you know, whenever they do a remake of a game, this is what they need to strive for.
Cool.
Yes. You're next.
My next one is Hollow Knight, one of the greatest indies to come out this generation. It's a equal parts Dark Souls meets a Metroidvania game. It has a haunting soundtrack and a really striking art style. The game itself is so engaging and in depth, like the amount of secrets in this game, you feel so accomplished when you discover a new route or a secret or something, and trying to piece together the story. Like, it's Dark Souls-esque not only in its like combat sensibilities, but also in the way it tells its story, which is almost entirely through environmental storytelling, since there is no spoken dialogue and most of the text is told cryptically. Oh man, I love this game. I'm so excited for Silk Song, which is the full true sequel, which we've been waiting on for what feels like ever. But Hollow Knight is just one of those rare indie games that stands tall among the AAA giants and says, sup. Ah! Anyway, that's my Troy trying to teach Jeff how to say sup.
It's incredible.
All right, final round. What you got, Josh?
Watch Dogs 2.
Yes.
The watchiest of all the dogs.
I'm not even fighting you on it because I was going to add it next round anyway.
You can't.
And if you weren't going to do it, I was going to do it later.
Look, it's so good.
It is so good. It's one of those things where the first game comes out and you're like, there's a lot of cool things happening in this game, but it's not executed. And then Watch Dogs 2 happens, and you're like, everything is executed. Why is this amazing? Why can I do pacifist mode? What, these characters are great. I love every single one of them. The story is really good. San Francisco is a great setting. Holy shit, I can tag? What is this? What is happening? This is amazing.
There's... Not only that, but... Oh, sorry. You go.
No,
Chris.
Go on. No, go on.
No, I insist. Okay, so, no. I love myself. Okay, go.
I was just going to say that, like, it's the biggest shame of this generation. They took the issues with Watch Dogs 1 and they fixed it. And they made a great, great game. And then it sat fallow for so long until we get Legions in, like, 20 days.
Which isn't even a true Watch Dogs 3 yet.
Yeah. And it feels like, from what I've seen, that they're going to bring back Aiden Pierce, which, cool, I guess. But I guess Watch Dogs 2 guy is fucked.
Marcus is just a better character.
Hands down.
He's more interesting, and his crew is more interesting.
The whole plot of that game was so much better than just Edgelord Hacker.
It was about, and
you know what? Marcus's gang would feel even more at home in today's world. Because they were all about, like, social justice and fighting, like, corporation overreach and stuff. And that would just be so much more resonant in 2020. And, I mean, I get it. Watchdog Legion is also touching on stuff like that. But, man, having Marcus as the main character instead of just generic NPCs that you take control of just feels like a missed opportunity. But one of the coolest things I found about Watchdogs 2 was that you could play the entire game non-lethally and do nothing but, like, stun takedowns. You didn't have to kill anybody.
It's the best way to play it because it just really, this is how a hacker would do it. Like, I can't even start because I'm not even going to start that route. But I'm just saying, like, they're pacifists. Like, at the end of the day, they just want to make sure, you know, shit don't go cray. and the people are protected. So, but yeah, that whole crew, the dynamic of the crew, the missions, everything about that game is great. And yeah, it is one of my games of the generation. It's in that top five list.
Hands down.
Yes.
All right, Chris.
All right, my final game is Deus Ex: Mankind Divided.
Yeah.
So Deus Ex is one of the cornerstones of PC gaming, and has been, since it came out. And the franchise, no one could really figure out what to do. Invisible War wasn't really popular, and they hit upon this new hybrid style game, and it's incredible. It's so well done. It takes place in Prague. It's got a beautiful setting, and it really rewards you for replaying the game over and over, because there's so many more interesting things to do once you get your mods, your AUG set up the right way. It's just a ton of fun, and I'm sad that it's not really going anywhere at the moment.
So here's a little side note. Do you prefer Mankind Divided over Human Revolution?
It's tough. I was thinking about that, because I replayed them last year or the year before. Time has no meaning anymore. But I think I prefer Mankind Divided slightly more.
Okay.
Interesting. I like Human Revolution a little more, but I loved Mankind Divided enough, and it was this gen, while Human Revolution was not, that I still probably would have put it on my list if you had not, because I'm not like you. I didn't play the original PC ones or the PS2 era ones, but I fell in love with Human Revolution. Adam Jensen is such a great character.
Yes, he
I
is.
love his gravelly
Shockingly.
voice. Ugh, good
That dude
times.
made a killing for a couple of years as the gravelly voice guy.
I follow him on Twitter. He's a good dude.
That's good. I my
Been
favorite is when
exploding.
he did the made-up language in Far Cry Primal.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good times.
Yeah. All right, Matt.
All right. My final one is one that I don't think anyone would argue with. It's a God of War.
Yeah,
The
they're.
one of the best reboots of a massive franchise I've ever encountered. It took the angsty one note, like, "Grr, I'm angry Kratos," that by the time you got to God of War Ascension, you're like, all right, I mean, it's just more of the same, and turned him into a more like contemplative, like, it's this kind of like the story of like how when you have a kid of your own, everything changes type of mentality. And you plop them in Norse mythology, and you turn it into a semi quasi open world quasi Metroidvania type game, where every time you gain a new power or ability, you open up a new path. And you just, oh, this is the first game where Caitlin would come home, and she was just randomly watching me play the intro. She had no interest in God of War. It was never anything to her. And by the time the prologue was done, I was told in no uncertain terms that I was not able to play the game unless she was present in the room, because she did not want to miss a moment of that story. It was just really well done, and I loved God of War, and so excited that they finally announced Ragnarok, because boy, that teaser at the end of God of War, oof,
It
bruh.
really can't be overstated how much a new location revitalized God of War. Like you were right. At the end of Ascension, like no one could care about
Yeah.
Kratos.
Like Ascension was just like, you were like, why?
And I do think it's important that they did that shift to Norse mythology, because there is something, Greek mythology is amazing and rich, and there's some great stories there. But it's like Kratos just went to go murder the Greek gods. This, on the other hand, he's just like, you know what? I need a place to lay low and not deal with this bullshit. So I'm going up to this Norse land. It's quiet. The gods aren't around. I'm cool. And then all of a sudden, the gods are like, wait, hold on. What's up with this guy?
Yeah.
It's, you know what? It's all Baldur's fault.
It is all Baldur's
Yep.
fault. And holy shit, how amazing of a character was Baldur? Like, that guy was amazing
Yeah.
and psychotic.
I mean, they did so much work, and they've set themselves up for a new trilogy, and God of War is now a premier game again.
Yeah. Do we think it's going to be a trilogy, or do we think it's just going to be these two games?
I imagine he's pushed there. Sony is probably pushing for a trilogy. So with that in mind, because if you remember, there was a distinct moment in God of War where he visits that the runes of all the other pantheons. And he's like, there's Greek and here's us. And then you saw Egyptian and you saw the Shinto gods.
Yeah, the Japanese.
And you're just like, so you know he has room to grow on this. And that's what I like.
Yeah.
So
I guess we'll see if it's Kratos moving on, or is it going to be something else?
I don't know. But it's still, like, these are good picks, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. We play good video games.
We try.
I mean, it was such a good generation. That's why we're doing this list.
That's why it's tough about the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X. It's so tough to move to a new gen right now because these consoles are so good. I can't speak for the Xbox One.
I think it speaks a lot that so far none of us have said any exclusive for the Xbox.
Which is, and that does say a lot about, like, how Microsoft kind of just... They fumbled, honestly. And, you know, I'm not going to be... I don't want to be, like, a Sony fanboy about it because, like, I love the Xbox 360. I really enjoyed that system. I thought it was a fantastic system, and I think Microsoft did a great job with that system. But sometimes, you know, you go back to Sony and you remember, oh, yeah, you're not that abusive.
So,
unlike Nintendo.
Good times.
Yeah. Can't wait till we get to our first Nintendo game.
Is that going to happen? I'm just going to say it. Breath of the Wild. Boom. Done.
No. Fuck it. That game is not on the list. I invoke veto power.
Animal Crossing. Done.
Better.
Matt, we're never going to win this fight.
Yeah, Breath of the Wild is supposed to be really good. I haven't played it, but I heard many great things about it. Such great things about it, it angers Matt.
You know what else you've heard a lot of great things about that you don't care about is Dokken Battle.
Yep, game of the year.
Game of the generation.
Game I put the most time in.
Literally no other game has been played more.
Oh my god, I didn't think about that. That game has been going on since I've been on this podcast.
And 6 years.
I've been 6 years.
Let that sink in.
Oh, I can't. It hurts.
All right, I think we're done for the day, Matt.
We are. That was a good show.
It was.
I hope we're...
All right, let's wrap it up. I'm Matt.
I'm Chris.
And I'm God.
Yeah, everything recorded, Josh. It's fine.
Okay, bye.
Bye.